right, the LSU Tigers will be coming to town to take on Vanderbilt here in Nashville, and it may be an angry bunch if they lost at home to Mississippi State, as we talked about this week. Back here on Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Speaking of ESPN, ESPN Baton Rouge, Matt Muscana is on the line with us. He covers LSU for them. Certainly knows the lay of the land. Matt, how you doing?
Guys, I'm doing great. Thanks for the invite.
How strange has this week of shows been?
This week has been, it's been interesting because normally after LSU loses a game, there's a general melt. And there was some of that, but I think Saturday there was still some sort of basking in the afterglow of a 15-0 season.
Okay.
And so maybe the sting wasn't as bad, which is an odd feeling. But I think the other thing that underscores is just how impressive it is for Clemson and Alabama and Ohio State and the programs that have success and are back there every single year, because that success isn't enough. It's not sustainable. They have to seek more, and I think LSU as a program is learning that right now.
Interesting. So their defense, I don't think anybody could have predicted that. We know all the losses, and you don't have Stingley Jr. there. I mean, he's one of the best defenders in the country. Looks like he'll be back here for this game. But how could anybody have seen that coming? And I guess now moving forward, Bo Pelini and that defense, how much cause for concern is there with this Tigers defense, or is there?
So I'll answer the first part about, you know, could you have seen that coming? Even with all the losses, I mean, they've been playing SEC football for roughly 90 years, and that's the most passing yards allowed in a game ever.
Yeah.
So I don't think anybody could have foreseen that. I think it would have been naive for anybody that's going to play a Mike Leach offense to not assume they're going to have success moving the football. That's what his whole game plan is predicated on, and he's done it everywhere he's been. To that level, it was obviously a surprise. What that told us about LSU is, I think, kind of the fear that I know that I had, many had, which is, while LSU's frontline guys, I think, are still as good as any, the problem is when you have a talent exodus like LSU had, with 14 guys drafted, 20 on NFL rosters, and Ja'Marr Chase and Tyler Shelvin and Kerry Vincent all opt out, the problem is your depth is just gutted. So you remove Derek Stingley, and the domino effect in that ball game was guys that had only played nickel now had to play boundary. Guys that weren't even expected to play were suiting up and playing 40, 50 snaps. It challenged LSU's depth, which, as we learned Saturday, isn't up to par yet. So I don't know that you can make a far-reaching analysis of that game on Bo Pelini. I don't think it's a referendum on him as a coach or what he'll be at LSU. I just think this year, the thing that's going to be LSU's Achilles heel is its lack of depth, and that was exposed Saturday.
You bring up the word exodus, and we knew that, you know, Joe Burrow leaving, there's going to be a drop-off no matter who it is. I mean, he was special, as you know, but it looked like the drop-off was pretty significant. How much concern is there at the quarterback position?
So, I mean, that's the two questions everybody here has talked about all week has been, obviously, the secondary, giving up the passing yards, and then Miles Brennan. And look, in a vacuum, if you just look at, you know, 340 yards and three touchdowns, I mean, 3 years ago in Baton Rouge, that would have been celebrated. I mean, a place that struggled with the forward pass. We're bemoaning a guy throwing for 340 yards and three scores. But I think context does matter. And if you actually watch the game, there were a lot of plays that Miles left out on the field. And maybe the most disappointing thing was, you know, a guy waits 4 years for his turn. I just would have thought he'd have been more aggressive. Like, I'll give you one example in particular. If you watch the game, if you didn't, there was a play where Brennan threw an interception and his arm got hit and the ball fluttered. Well, the receiver was 5 to 7 yards already of separation with the cornerback. I mean, he was wide open. The ball should have come out, you know, 2 seconds, two clicks before that it did, and allowed the pass to be, you know, to be intercepted, his arm to be hit. That's where you just need to see a little more decisiveness from Brennan. it's not a physical thing, guys. He's got size and arm strength and talent and all that stuff. And it's not a mental thing either. Miles knows the offense. He's as smart as they come. He doesn't just know his role. He knows every receiver, the line, the protection. He's got all of that. It's just that proverbial, people say, well, the game just has to slow down. I think that's all it is. Even though he's a fourth-year guy, he's making his first start, and I think he just needed to slow down a little bit. So we'll see if he improves there this weekend. But I think a lot of people understood it was going to be a transition from what Joe was to whatever was going to be next. And we saw that on Saturday.
Matt Muscana is with us, covers LSU, and, of course, he's a reporter for ESPN Baton Rouge. And so, Matt, let's talk about sort of the big picture. First, well, I'm curious your perspective on the whole 60 Minutes thing from Ed Orgeron. You know, we were talking about this, just how crazy it would have been to think about Ed Orgeron being featured on 60 Minutes a few years before when it looked like he wasn't going to make it through the season. He was just like, he was dead man walking. When are they going to fire him? It's just not going well. And then here he is a few years later being featured on a non-sports show, right, for the one of the bigger shows you could possibly be on, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, the longest-running news magazine show in history, 60 Minutes. It's amazing. Life comes at you quick, man. We just passed last week the four-year mark of Les Miles being fired after that Auburn game, and it has been one heck of a roller coaster for LSU football since then. From the depths of losing to Troy and getting blown out by Mississippi State to what we saw last year of, you know, inarguably the greatest season in college football history. So, you know, Ed, I think, is an example. The interesting thing that I'm going to be fascinated to watch in college football is if Ed Orgeron does become somewhat of a test case for other programs. I think we're seeing it at Arkansas. What I mean is, you know, Ed Orgeron won a title without really a specialty, right? He's never been a coordinator. So Ed sort of built this program with the idea of, okay, I love LSU from Louisiana. I can recruit like mad. Let me do that, be the figurehead, hire great coordinators, delegate, and build up. And I don't know if you've noticed, guys, but Arkansas basically did the same thing. They hired Sam Pittman, who's an Arkansas guy, line coach, emotional, rah-rah, great recruiter, and he went and hired two coordinators, Barry Odom, who had been a head coach in the SEC, and I'm blanking on the coordinator. He was the OC at Baylor. His dad was the head. Kendall Briles.
Right.
So he went and got two really well-known coordinators to try to build around him. So I know it's a long-winded answer, but I think Ed's rise has been something that's caught so many people's attention that I think it may actually end up having a longer-term effect in college football, at least as how ADs hire head coaches. In the way, remember the fad 10 years ago was the coach in waiting? Everybody had a coach.
Oh, yeah.
Well, no coach in waiting. I mean, you all learned this. I mean, James Franklin was a coach in waiting at Maryland when Vanderbilt hired him. So
yeah.
It's like that was sort of the fad then. I'm wondering if Ed's success may not create this sort of copycat mold in college football.
So much was made about bringing in Brady. Remember the guru, the 29-year-old. Yeah. And he's not there anymore, so it's easy after one game to say, well, they're going to be missing him. But do you think that's a fair thing to observe, Matt, or is that overblown?
So I've talked about Joe Brady a lot this offseason, and I think it is disingenuous to completely minimize the impact that he had. But I also think something that many people have lost sight of is Joe Brady was not the offensive coordinator a year ago. Steve Ensminger was. Joe Brady did not work with the quarterbacks. Steve Ensminger and George Munoz did. And Dave Aranda took Munoz with him to Baylor. Brady worked with receivers. And his specialty was kind of third down pass plays and things like that. You know, he did some of the zone read concepts. I guess, you know, Brady came to Baton Rouge at a point where it was this perfect confluence of events where you had Joe Burrow, who was this generational quarterback. You had all the talent there, and he was undoubtedly an unlock, right? He was a missing, like, the corner piece on the puzzle that was otherwise finished. But he wasn't the body of the puzzle. So I had no problem with LSU's play calling on Saturday. I just described, you know, the play where Miles threw an interception. I mean, that was a beautiful play call. LSU had really set that up. They'd softened up the middle with the run, and then that was a play fake. It was executed almost to perfection if the ball comes out earlier. So I don't want to minimize the impact Brady had, because it was significant in that moment a year ago. I just don't know if Joe Brady's there on Saturday if it makes a material difference.
We're talking to Matt Muscana, ESPN Baton Rouge, about LSU coming to town to take on Vanderbilt. So, you know, we're obviously here in Nashville and talk to Coach Mason on a weekly basis. We keep up with Vandy. They gave Texas A&M a fight. There are no moral victories, but if there were, I think that would be a pretty good one. So from afar, as you're around LSU, what do you see from Vanderbilt with their revamped offense and defense?
I don't know what to make of Ken Seals. I know he's a winner in high school. The thing about Vanderbilt a year ago was you knew Keyshawn Vaughn and Kalijah Lipscomb were players that were going to be Sunday guys. And I don't know if Vanderbilt has any of those on offense right now. Maybe they do. I know Abdur Rahman at receiver is a guy who had a nice day last week, but I also know Derek Stingley is going to be back. So from LSU standpoint, you feel really good telling Stingley, hey, you got him. Don't let him breathe, and we'll figure the rest out. I think Vanderbilt's strength in this game is its defensive line, and maybe its entire defensive front seven if Demetri Moore's going to play. I don't know if you guys might be able to let me know if he's going to play. I don't know if he's going to play, but you know, that defensive front seven against a remade LSU offensive line, which gave up seven sacks against Mississippi State, really struggled and is going to be without its starting left tackle on Saturday. I think that's an area where maybe Vanderbilt could give LSU some problem and end up in a game similar to what they did in College Station, where you're in a 14-12 ball game going into the fourth quarter, and if a ball bounces left instead of right, maybe you have a chance to win it. Guys, I still think LSU is the more talented team and should win, and it's a reason it's a three-score spread. But I do think that's a spot where that's a matchup on the line, the Vanderbilt defensive front seven against LSU's offensive line, where maybe Vandy has an edge, and that could be significant enough to keep it low-scoring enough to give them a chance late in the ballgame to try to win it.
Demetri Moore is expected to play, but no official word.
That's okay.
That's what I was able to find out. So I am curious, Matt, of you know, the Bayou Bengals, obviously the team you talk about, with Burrow's success last year, are people in your market more interested in Cincinnati? Are they keeping up with him, or is it simply
our radio group reached out to the Bengals to carry the Bengals games on our radio station? We're the LSU flagship. And by the way, the Bengals said no.
Really?
they said no.
What?
Said no. I think they wanted something. They said like maybe next year or something, or they wanted like a 3-year commitment or something. I don't know all the particulars, but the Bengals basically rejected us. Yeah. So
wow.
We wanted to carry Bengals games this year. So yes, people here are definitely Cincinnati Bengal fans. There's no doubt about it. Like, people are watching horrendous football just to watch Joe Burrow, yeah.
Is it a little weird to for them to see him throw to T. Higgins?
No, I don't think so at all. I think that's kind of cool, man. I saw a mock draft this week where I think it made Pro Football Focus had the Bengals taking Ja'Marr Chase, which that would be super intriguing if those two hooked up again. But I think, you know, I don't want to like completely break down the Cincinnati Bengals, but I was kind of excited for Joe to go there. The offensive line is horrendous, and if they might get him killed. But they have a lot of nice offensive weapons, man. You got a healthy A.J. Green, you got T. Higgins, you got a 1,000-yard receiver from a year ago, you got a good running back in Joe Mixon. I mean, there's some talent on the offensive side of the ball there to work with Joe. Just they got to keep him upright, man. I'm going to get him split in half.
They said no. That's the part I can't get past.
Isn't that crazy?
No. That doesn't make any sense. Like, the Bengals are good. Hey, no, we're good. We don't need any more markets. We're good.
Oh, crazy, boy.
Matt, always appreciate the visits. Thanks so much. Enjoy your weekend. We'll talk to you down the road.
Okay, guys. Be well.
Matt Muscana, ESPN Baton Rouge. There you go. A little flavor on the LSU Tigers who come to town to take on Vanderbilt this Saturday. And it can be heard on 93.3 Classic Hits, part of our Cromwell family. Why would Cincinnati say no? I mean, I just don't
that
understand
makes no sense.
That.
No, and when he said that, I kind of, okay, are the Saints blocking it? You know, is that because that's, I guess, their territory? But right. That's silly.
That makes zero sense. Why would you say no? Three-year deal.
People want to hear your games?
People want to hear your games in Louisiana? You say, nah, we're good? What? Since when are you good in Cincinnati? What?
I don't get that.
Oh, by the way, how intriguing would that be if they drafted Chase, huh? I think
like
they'd probably sign a three-year deal down in Baton Rouge for Cincinnati games, would be my guess.
Yeah, I would think at that point they realize that they have another market that they can take it, you know, take an advantage of getting that market. I think that would be a good move for them.
Did you guys, you know, going back to the Jets-Broncos game, because, you know, you couldn't really pay really, really close attention without drifting away to other things because it just didn't allow you. I mean, just look at the matchup. But did you happen to look at the Jets' remaining schedule? Now, they're 0-4, right? Have you looked at their schedule?
I haven't.
I do know that whatever you're about to read, in a nutshell, I saw this flash up on the screen this morning. I think it was on ESPN. I was just flipping around. But they have the highest chance of any team of going winless.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they are. I mean, there's not. I guess they have the
Cardinals.
Dolphins twice. Okay. They got the Cardinals, the Chargers. Okay, Chargers. They got a ton of injuries there. Yeah, okay. Buffalo, Kansas City, New England, Miami twice, which is interesting. Miami in back-to-back weeks, separated
well,
by a bye week.
Yeah.
Right, but still. Like, when do you play a team in the NFL in back-to-back weeks, right? Like, you play them twice before you play anybody else. Las Vegas Raiders, Seattle, the Rams, the Browns, and New England. So they have New England twice, too. I mean, you tell me where a win's coming. I mean, I see possibly a 1 or 2 win season, possibly. And here's the thing. If they get the number one pick, what are they going to do?
They're going to take Trevor Lawrence.
But are they? It's the Jets. So
I understand that. But if they don't take Trevor Lawrence, then they should just give up.
If I'm running the show, I'm taking Trevor Lawrence and saying, Sam, we love you, man. Sorry, man. We're going to be looking to trade you. I'm taking Trevor Lawrence. But
and if I'm Sam Darnold, I'd probably be like, okay. No hard feelings.
Right. But will they? Because it looks like, I mean, that schedule is brutal. I don't see the wins. I don't see this massive turnaround for the Jets. So they look like they're on a collision course for the number one pick in the draft.
What about the Giants?
Of course. You're right. They don't look much better.
Can you imagine?
Saquon Barkley, man. They got nothing.
Can you imagine doing sports radio in New York right now? Oh, both teams are just abysmal.
Well, you've got,
you know, they don't
Willie's
hold back.
Matt, you've got, now just think about the number one market in the country. You've got Willie's Mets. You know the theme there, constant heartache. The Knicks, my goodness. When was the last time the Knicks were relevant in the NBA?
Well, the Mets were relevant a lot. I mean, in fairness
Mets. I didn't say the Mets weren't relevant. I said all the stuff that they've had. They have a lot of dumb things happen to them. You would have to admit that, right?
Oh, yeah.
Like we use the term, of course, it's typical. It's the Mets.
Yeah,
the Mets
have a lot of follies for about 5 or 6 years, and then every 5 or 6 years they have a couple of good years, and then they have the cycle start over again. But
they're not the Knicks. I'm not comparing
them.
No, they are not the Knicks.
The Knicks are a complete train wreck and have been for decades now.
Yeah.
But then you have the Giants and Jets. And, you know, the Yankees are still in, so they're going to be the focus right now. And then, you know, the Rangers have the first pick in the draft.
Yeah, Rangers and Islanders, fine. What about the Nets?
Well, they were big in the news. Now, that it's the Brooklyn Nets. I don't know how much of the spotlight they get in New York, but they do have a couple of megastars that are already. I mean, Kyrie's always up for saying something that tweaks people.
right?
It's a good way to put it.
Yeah, that's a nice way of putting it.
He just did it yesterday.
Of course.
So that will be interesting. You know, how much, when they crank it back up, will the Brooklyn Nets be the focal point of New York basketball? But, hey, New York. Well, and I've got – this is going to lead us into my who's on the list because of the aftermath of last night's game. The media up there, unreal.
If you have not heard, the Titans-Steelers game hit has been made official. It will be a Week 7 game here in Nashville, which is October 25th. Seating capacity will go up for that contest. It'll be 15%. At Nissan Stadium, the Ravens and Steelers will now play their game in Week 8. That was supposed to be the Steelers' bye week. So that's been pushed to a Week 8 contest. So the Steelers will get the Titans and the Ravens in back-to-back weeks. So if you have not heard that, that has been made official by the league. When we come back, we'll make it official on who or what has made you mad. 615-737-1025, 737-1025. You just made the list. Next.